Jake is a fictional character, but what they went through is happening across West Midlands today. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in England, transport infrastructure projects that could connect communities and create jobs remain on drawing boards while skilled construction workers claim benefits. The engineers exist, the materials are available, but the political will to deploy government spending power into these communities does not. This is Jake's account of trying to build the future that Westminster says it cannot afford.
I grew up on a council estate in Bilston. Left school at 16 and spent my 20s working construction sites across the Black Country. After getting made redundant from a factory demolition job in 2019, I retrained as a plant operator. Now I drive excavators and bulldozers, the big machines that actually move the earth when someone decides to build something. My dad worked at the steelworks before they closed. I keep his old hard hat on the dashboard of my van, not out of nostalgia, but as a reminder of what steady work used to look like around here. In early 2023, I started hearing about plans for new rail links and tram extensions in Wolverhampton. Real infrastructure, the kind that would mean months of work for someone like me. I contacted West Midlands Combined Authority to ask about construction opportunities. They told me to register with their supplier portal, which I did, but then came the catch. Major infrastructure projects were subject to government funding decisions, they said. The tone was apologetic but final, like they were explaining the weather. I figured I'd go direct to the source, so I drove to Network Rail's Birmingham office. The project manager I spoke to was helpful enough. He showed me designs for station upgrades and track improvements. Proper detailed plans that someone had clearly spent months working on. The technical specifications were all there. The route surveys were complete. But then he explained that the Treasury had not released the capital budget. "We're ready to go," he said, "but the money hasn't been allocated yet." I registered with three construction agencies, including Balfour Beatty. Same story everywhere. They had my details. They knew the projects I was qualified for, but there was no confirmed work pipeline due to spending constraints. Not one agency could tell me when that might change. They spoke about government funding like it was rainfall, something that might or might not arrive depending on forces beyond anyone's control. At Wolverhampton College, I inquired about advanced plant operator courses. The coordinator was eager to help and walked me through their training facility. It was impressive, brand new simulators for every type of heavy machinery you could think of. State-of-the-art equipment that could train someone to operate a £200,000 excavator without touching the real thing until they were ready. But the courses were suspended, she explained, because the funding stream was redirected to other priorities. For months, I accepted these explanations. They sounded reasonable. Everyone I spoke to seemed genuinely sorry about the situation. The phrase I heard most was, "There is no funding." It became a kind of refrain repeated so often that it started to feel like a law of physics rather than a decision someone had made. Then I started paying attention to what I could see with my own eyes. Walking through my neighbourhood, I counted at least a dozen skilled tradesmen I'd worked with over the years, all of them now claiming universal credit. These weren't people who couldn't work or didn't want to work. These were bricklayers, welders, crane operators, the exact workforce you'd need for a major infrastructure project. I drove past the college again and noticed something that stopped me short. The construction yard behind the main building was locked up, but I could see through the fence. It was full of unused cranes and earth movers, etchmed. Expensive training equipment, sitting idle under tarpaulins. The machines were there. The instructors were there, many of them former tradesmen, like the people I knew who were out of work. The students were there. People like me who wanted to learn new skills or upgrade existing ones. That's when the excuses stopped making sense. If the people existed and the building existed and the equipment existed and the need existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? I started to understand that when someone in Westminster said they couldn't find the funding, they weren't describing a shortage of physical resources. They were describing a choice. The government that issues the pound chose not to spend the pounds that would connect the people standing right there, ready to work, to the infrastructure projects sitting on those drawing boards. That wasn't an accounting problem. That was a political decision dressed up in the language of impossibility. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fad. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It's the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still ready to work. But I understand now that what happened to me isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency, where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard isn't bare. Someone just decided not to open it.
What Jake experienced has a name. Logical fallacy. A false analogy is when you compare two different things as though they work the same way. You wouldn't manage a goldfish bowl like the ocean just because both contain water. The bowl has fixed boundaries. The ocean connects to weather systems that can add or remove water. But every time someone told Jake, there is no money, they were treating the UK government like a household saving up for an extension. A household has to earn pounds before it spends them. The UK government issues the pounds. When the Treasury allocates funding, it's not moving money from one account to another. It's authorising new spending into existence. The Department for Transport didn't need to find pounds sitting in a vault before building those rail links. It needed to decide whether the engineers, the steel and the construction workers existed. They did. The constraint was never financial. Jake saw the proof. Skilled workers claiming benefits while training facilities sat locked and infrastructure projects stayed on drawing boards. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Wolverhampton South East ranks 27 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025. 1,225 registered charities operate in the constituency according to the Charity Commission Register. The area received £22.4 million in total grants according to 360 Giving Grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.